08-13-19, U.S. versus Bug. You may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm David Morrison, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Christopher Budd. Mr. Budd pled guilty to four counts involving allegations of child pornography after the wrongful, what we believe is the wrongful denial of a motion to suppress. In this case, we have a situation where Mr. Budd takes a computer to a computer repair store on December 13th, indicating that he thinks that there's a bad power supply on it. He's a student at a local community college.
It would be a shock to you, but we've read the briefs.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the court's ruling, I think that the court was correct in its determination that the detention of 48 days without seeking a warrant was unreasonable in determining the length of the detention and the diligency or lack of diligence of the officers in pursuit of their investigation. Where I think the court erred, however, is in their determination that there was an independent source. As stated in the Murray case, the intention of the independent source doctrine is to not put the police in a worse position than they would have been had the illegality not occurred. In this case, we have officers who hold on to the computer for 48 days, and then they seek a warrant. During that time, Mr. Budd is contacting on numerous occasions the computer store, trying to get the return of his computer, until January 15th, when he calls the police department to, in fact, report the theft of his computer, at which time he's informed by the police officers, "We have your computer," and ask him to come down to talk to them about that. By applying the independent source doctrine, we don't put the police in the same position they would have been had there not been an illegality, but we actually put them in a better position. When they hold on to it for 48 days, it's secured there away from Mr. Budd, and they can come at their leisure then and apply for a warrant in this case. The application of the doctrine in this case certainly allows the police to benefit from their illegal activity, which I believe is the purpose in the exclusionary rules, that they not benefit. In the Murray case, the court itself said that an independent and subsequent search may well be difficult to establish when, in fact, the item that was seized is kept in the police possession. So, in fact, this case is the case that was contemplated by the Murray court when they say we'll entertain an independent source argument. However, if we have a situation where the police hold on to the item and then have a subsequent or claim to have a subsequent independent source, that we'll look at that with a very jaundiced eye. In this case, also, although the court indicates there was a separate independent source, in fact, there was not any independent source. There was no independent federal investigation, although the court cites the Grolinger case and says that, in fact, our case is very similar. But the differences between the case at bar and that case, I think, are significant. In that case, the length of the detention by the state officer was a matter of about 4 hours. Within 5 hours, a separate federal investigator had been contacted, came, reseizes the computer, and actually goes and seeks an independent warrant from a federal magistrate. In this case, there was no such independent reseizure. In fact, it was Detective Teschek who picks up the computer on December 14th. He keeps it at the Moline City Police Department until January 30th, and in fact, he is the one that signed the application for the search warrant and, in fact, turned the computer over then to the authorities to do the computer-based search. So unlike the case cited by the court in its ruling, there was no independent source, no independent reseizure of the items in this case. With regard to that, there's also that issue. The only evidence that we have of an intention of a reseizure is the federal officer himself. Agent Lynn says, well, even if they hadn't held onto the computer for 48 days, I would have gone and sought my own independent warrant. However, the Murray case stated that someone's independent, bald assertion that I would have done something differently or things could have been done differently are not enough to support a finding of an independent source.
But here we've got the information from Doyle, who was the computer store owner.
That's correct, Your Honor, and all of that information was relayed to the federal agent, Agent Lynn, on January 25th by Detective Teschick. No time between January 25th and January 30th does Agent Lynn go and actually apply for a separate warrant.
But I mean, in terms of feasibility of having, this wasn't speculative in terms of what he could have done in terms of interviewing Doyle, or, you know, couldn't he have just relied on what Doyle?
That is true, Your Honor, that he could have re-interviewed Doyle. But I think that the indication of what he could have done or what he intended to do is best demonstrated by what he did or did not do. And we know that from January 25th to the 30th, he didn't make a search warrant application. Detective Teschick did that. After January 30th, he didn't seek any separate federal warrant, search warrant for this computer. And I think that those are distinguishing factors between the case cited by the court in the Grossenheider case and this case. The 20-gigabyte hard drive also is derivative evidence, which I believe needs to be suppressed as a fruit of the poisonous tree in this matter.
Why is that the case? Seems he came in and he voluntarily made this statement that had nothing to do with the length of time the computer was in the control of the police.
Well, Your Honor, once again, when the police have now, at this point on January 15th, when Bud calls to report that his computer has been stolen, the police have had his computer for they've had it for 30 days. And when he says, I want to report the theft of my computer, they say, we've got your computer. Not only that, we know.
Yeah, and then he says, oh, yeah, it's got all this pornography on it. And why does that statement have to be suppressed?
Because it is the derivative from the illegal detention. If that computer had not been held.
It seems to me it's just a voluntary statement.
If you have an individual, there would have been no reason for Mr. Budd to call the Moline Police Department to report the theft of his computer on January 7th, I believe it's the 15th, if they were in fact holding it. So in other words, their continued detention for a period of 30 days without a warrant causes him to call and report it stolen, and I don't think that it's disputed that but for that detention, he would have had any reason to call the police department. After he had exhausted all of his remedies through the store, he had gone to a local...
But for causation, all you have to show to make it fruit of a poisonous tree?
Well, I believe that when we're talking about derivative evidence, I believe that the test is whether or not the taint is so attenuated as to make the subsequent discovery independent. And in this case, I don't think that that's the case. There would have been no... There's a direct connection between...
Well, this was not discoveries. These were voluntary statements, weren't they?
In response to an officer saying, Detective Teschick saying in the record, that we've got your computer, and by the way, we know what's on it, and gives a specific name of a file on that computer, which then elicits the responses from Mr. Budd. So I don't believe that but for having detained the computer, there would have been any conversation at all. Mr. Budd would have had no reason whatsoever to contact the police and have the discussion.
Supposing he had gone to the police 2 days after the thing had been turned over.
Well, I do think it makes a difference. I do believe that in the cases...
2 days. Bear with me. Suppose it had been 2 days instead of 30. And he called and he said, no, we've got to come on in, and he confessed then. Is that any difference there? You're really in your rebuttal. Or don't you leave any rebuttal?
I had 1 minute, Your Honor. But
you've got that minute.
Why don't you answer that? I'll give you an extra minute. You can answer that question.
I do believe that in the cases such as the Mayomi case, which the court in this matter had distinguished from the case at bar, and also in
the question case, is the effect on the statement. Would the time element have anything to do with the statement?
I don't know that it has anything to do with the statement, but it does have to do with the reasonableness of the. I think we have a.
But if he went in there two days afterwards and said, "Oh yeah, that's my stuff," that would have been okay. That statement would have gone.
I think it would have been a different argument. I think that with regard
would
to
would it have been admissible?
would make it, depending on the court's finding the reasonableness of the detention, I think that a two-day detention without the warrant is going to be a much closer call whether or not that is reasonable.
Gotcha. No, he's not going to answer it directly. All right, thank you. We'll call Ms. Mullen.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. This morning, what I'd like to do is try to map out for this panel what we see as the shortest and most direct route to affirmance of the district court. We know first that the private search by Tom Doyle was just that, a private search. He was repairing the computer and saw this child pornography a few seconds worth, reported it to the Moline PD. The information that he gave the Moline Police Department provided probable cause to seize the computer. It is undisputed that the police officers never looked at the contents of that computer until after they obtained the valid warrant to search. They simply did not benefit from that seizure in any way. The seizure of the computer was totally irrelevant to the securing of the warrant and the search that ensued. And that's really all that this court need find. Even if the 40-some-day seizure of the computer was unreasonable, and we think there's an argument to be made that it wasn't, but even if it was, it ultimately didn't matter in this case.
Can I take care of that?
If the panel has no questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
I just have one quick question. Would the statements from Doyle have been enough for a judge to issue a warrant?
Absolutely. It provided probable cause that there was child pornography on the computer. He did view part of that file. He was very explicit about what he saw there and relayed that information both to the police officer and then again that was in the affidavit for the search warrant.
Any questions?
Thank you.
I'll give you an additional minute, counsel.
I blew your minute, but you get one headed back.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the issue of the length of time, it is relevant in this matter because if we're talking about the agent applying for a search warrant on January 25th, 2007, and the computer has been returned to Mr. Budd, there's no guarantee whether or not the evidence is still going to be available for the police when they go get it. I think it is cited actually in the appellee's brief about destruction of evidence can happen by accident, it can happen by mistake, and in this case we actually have statements in the record from my client to the police officers. I have a history of deleting everything off of my computer. So I do think that it is relevant to the length of time because there's no guarantee that when the officer, if he had made an application for a search warrant, which he did not, but if the federal officer had, that there's any guarantee that there would have been any evidence to seize at that time. And therefore, I do believe that they did benefit from this delay of 48 days.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement. That concludes the oral argument for the day. The court will stand in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.